move, going deep, speed race. He's got Hill! He's got Hill!
From the Baptist Health Studios, inside the Baptist Health Training Complex, this is Drive Time with Travis Wingfield.
He's got it! Miami is in the playoffs!
What is up, Dolphins, and welcome to the Drive Time Podcast. I am your host, Travis Wingfield, and on today's show, I am fired up because we have a chance to look into some roster building ideas, how things might go over the next couple of weeks here, and what might happen in the new league year. We'll continue looking through the free agent options, players who've been cut from other teams, which of course means they could sign now, today, right now, like we saw with Jonnu Smith on Thursday, at any time. We'll look into that, playing Miami Dolphins football, what a third year in the offense might look like for developmental players, and just a referendum on all the options the Dolphins have this upcoming offseason. From the Baptist Health Studios inside the Baptist Health Training Complex, this is the Drive Time Podcast. So when you look at roster construction and avenues for improvement, it's really threefold for an NFL team, right? The draft and the rookies is one area. The veteran acquisitions and the many sub-genres off of that, trades, free agency, etc. And then the one that never really seems to be discussed, player development, incumbent improvement. How can you extract more from those incumbents on your roster? Because every single year it happens. And we, the royal football, we, the cognoscenti, as it were, you get... Like, the way we are is you get 17 games of a player, and you assume that's who he is, right? Not just for the next season, but for perpetuity. That player is the same player, lock it in, can't change my mind on it until, well, next year when I get a whole new batch of results. And I always say it, progression is not linear, quite the opposite, rather, in this sport most of the time. Now, you do have examples like Tua, where every year of his career, he's gotten better. And hell, if that's the case for the next 4 years of his career, then we're in for a hell of a ride and a ton of wins, right? Because that progress has been linear. And if he is 4 years advanced in terms of progress from where he is right now, we are going to be an absolute force to be reckoned with for the foreseeable future. Perhaps the proper way to say all this, though, is that every case is unique from the next one. What do coaches always say? Case by case, right? Whether it's injuries, contract, playing situation, like it's all case by case. For instance, and I know I've beaten this horse to death, but if I told you last year on March 8th that Austin Jackson would be your best offensive lineman in 2023 to the point that he garners a contract extension before Christmas, you wouldn't have believed that, right? And you'd be right to have that concern that you're crazy for saying so. If I told you the Broncos 2 years ago would eat $85 million of dead cap 2 years after sending multiple first-round draft picks to the Seahawks, who used those picks to kind of rebuild what was a bottom-tier team into a playoff contender for Russell Wilson, you get what I'm saying here, right? So what I want to do is look at the third-year progression. Maybe it's not even progression across the board, but the trends of the third year under the former Shanahan-McDaniel marriage. This was a pretty damn successful piece of content I did last year in terms of asking every media member I could find, interview, diving into the stats myself, talking to Tua, to Coach McDaniel, various players across the offense, former players, how that second year in the system benefits them. And it was always some version of the same answer. Number one, now you get to watch your own tape opposed to watching somebody else's tape, like Teron Armstead got to watch himself in 2023, back looking at the 2022 season, opposed to his first year here in 22, looking at Trent Williams, for instance, in San Francisco in 21, because he didn't have his own tape in that system. That's the big one. And the number two is always, you can just get to so much more of your playbook. You go from a quarter inch to a 3-inch playbook. Like, it's a big jump, right? Right, ladies? Well, it's not exactly earth-shattering, but you essentially take the second point and expand it. I want to go ahead and just remind you of the audio. that joke about quarter-inch playbook is exactly what Daniel Jeremiah said in the podcast back in Indianapolis, saying that Tom Brady was kind of the guy, the poster child for the continuity and an evolving offensive playbook. Now it's Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes. And the most beneficial way of that is just building on building on building on what you've done in the past, which does sort of fly in the face of kind of how McDaniel has talked about offensive evolution because he believes that you kind of have to reinvent yourself each year. But I do believe that just that communication, the familiarity, the route concepts, there's so many things that will be plugged into that that are similar, that are the same, that is like, you know, riding a bike. You get back on, okay, here we go. We're at square three opposed to square one because, you know, that familiarity with how each other works, how you watch film, how you address each other in the huddle at practice, all of that stuff being, you know, on step three opposed to step one come OTAs in April, that matters because then you can get into training camp at step six opposed to step three, right? So I wanted to look at what year three looked like in the various stops of McDaniel previously, and let's not do the pre-Washington days because I'm just not that concerned with McDaniel's, you know, proximity to a team where he was an offensive assistant in Houston or a coaching intern in 2005 as a 21-year-old in Denver, whatever the hell he was at that time. The difficult part about this, though, is that there's only two instances because the staff never saw year three in Cleveland or Atlanta, but that year two jump in Atlanta was really the driving point of last year's podcast, right? The 2016 Falcons offense was a pretty good feather in the cap of both Kyle Shanahan and Mike McDaniel. So instead, we are looking at the 2019 San Francisco 49ers and the 23 Washington, beep boop, the third year of McDaniel and Shanahan together at those stops. So McDaniel was the receivers coach that year in Washington for the football team who shall not be named, and the run game coordinator in San Francisco in 2019. And just real quick, because I'm always curious to see how guys, players in their rooms perform, in 2013, in that Washington receivers room under Mike McDaniel, Pierre Garçon had 1,346 yards and five tugs. That was the star of coach's room that year, right? In total, his receivers had just a clip under 2,800 receiving yards and 12 touchdowns. And, like, this isn't exactly Ja'Marr Chase, T. Higgins, and Tyler Boyd. Like, no, it was Garçon. And then we're talking about a 34-year-old Santana Moss. We're talking about Leonard Hankerson. We're talking about Aldrick Robinson, Josh Morgan, and Niles Paul. That sounds like a 60s English, you know, rock group or something. The Beatles? I don't know. In 2012, before McDaniel took over that room, well, Garçon had half as many yards, 633, so less than half actually, right? Math numbers. They had in total 2,578 yards, so about 300 receiving yards less if my math is correct, about 250 yards there. But that's not exactly what I wanted to look at here because I think the overall progression of the offense and just kind of a year-by-year explanation of how that went for them is what we are looking for. So in 2011 for Washington, they were 16th in total offense, 14th in passing, 25th in rushing, the first year of Shanahan and McDaniel together there in Washington. The next year, big jump, right? RG3's rookie season, 5th in total offense, 20th in the pass, so regression there, but from the 21st run game all the way up to the first ranked running game. And then 2013, 9th in total offense, 16th in pass, and 5th in the running game. And quite frankly, I tend to think 2013, like on balance, is a more impressive result there because we know what happened in 2012. And they absolutely get the most credit for this, but they kind of hit the NFL with something it hadn't seen, kind of like the Wildcat in 08, with the zone read attack utilizing an extremely unique quarterback in Robert Griffin III, who was kind of like, you know, Lamar Jackson before Lamar Jackson and Michael Vick after Michael Vick. Like, there has only been three or four quarterbacks, you know, Cam Newton is in that category as well, that have played the position in that style. And so for RG3 to hit the new trend of zone read and Colin Kaepernick kind of taking it to the next step a couple of years down the road, like, it was so unique that I think that the NFL hadn't quite yet adjusted to that. And you factor in a Lamar Jackson type of runner at the position, I think the first ranked running offense was kind of a given when they had all those things aligned at that point in that season. But in 2013, RG3 gets injured or is coming off the injury in the playoff game in January 2012. So only a few months out from the 2013 season, and he didn't have those same legs the next season, from 815 rushing yards to 490 and no touchdowns on the ground after 7 as a rookie. But to get 7 yards per pass from a quarterback who had his fair share of pocket passing issues in an era where 7 yards per attempt was still like kind of the bubble there, and then to start a second-year quarterback in fourth-round pick Kirk Cousins for 3 games and to get 26 and 23 points out of those games when it was an offense completely different in terms of the style of it, of his skill set, and for a guy that was, you know, incredibly green behind the ears and quite frankly at that point thought to be maybe at best a career-long backup. So I think you can look at the jump in passing from their second-year quarterback as a feather in the cap. They also got the Garcon jump. Roy Helu, remember that name? Went from total unknown to actual contributor. They got 16 starts from Trent Williams, Tyler Palumbis, Corey Lichtensteiger, and Chris Chester, and they all had their best pass block efficiency of their careers or the second best of their career. So the entire offense, really, all the results were superior from 2012 to 2013. And the familiarity helping there, I certainly think it did. So that's a good look at how that jump happened in year three. Now, though, let's do San Francisco, where you might get even more excited about this, because in 2017, when they took over their 12th-ranked total offense, that's pretty impressive for the personnel they had that year, 9th in passing offense. That was Brian Hoyer, guys. They were 21st in the running game. And, well, I guess Jimmy G came in the last five games and made that different with five straight wins. But in 2018, they went down to the 16th-ranked offense, but that had injuries that year as well. They were the 15th-ranked passing offense, the 13th-ranked run defense, so a big jump in the running game in year two, just like we saw this year with Mike McDaniel and Miami Dolphins. But 2019, with a healthy quarterback, second in total offense, first in passing offense. Yeah, not bad. Like, you know, these quarterbacks get so much crap, but when they produce like that, it's hard to really, you know, disparage them. They were the 17th-ranked running offense that year, so that regression happened there. But I would take that trade. I'd rather go from 15th in passing and 13th in rushing to 1st in passing and 17th in rushing, because what happens? You go from 16th in total offense to 2nd. That's a big jump there. But again, 2017, Brian Hoyer, and it was a total rebuild, right? First year there after the Jim Tomsula and Chip Kelly disasters. Then, if you recall, Jimmy G gets injured in game number 3 of 2018, and so it winds up being C.J. Beathard and Nick Mullins for 13 games. Then 2019, they had Jimmy G all year, but man, look at the jump in total offense and passing offense. If we see anything close to that progression in year 3 for Tua and Mike McDaniel together, you're talking about a record-breaking offense. Kittle that year went from Pro Bowl to All-Pro in 2019. Mostert went from 261 yards to 772 on the ground, one touchdown to 8. McGlinchey went from like first round bust in his rookie year to a really good 18 to a great 2019. And now he's on a massive contract with the Broncos, although progression not always linear because he struggled his butt off in 2023, right? After really good 19 through 2022 seasons. I mean, the examples are rampant. Debo burst onto the scene in 2019. Laken Tomlinson, Weston Richburg, Joe Staley all had top 10 PBEs among their position groups. That entire offense really performed in that third year under Kyle Shanahan and partially under Mike McDaniel. So I think there's always, you know, there's enough here paired with what we've heard, you know, Daniel Jeremiah tell me, what we've heard Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, Drew Brees talk about in terms of the continuity they enjoyed throughout the course of their careers. You know, Peyton always had Howard Mudd, and Tom Brady always had Josh McDaniels, and Drew Brees always had Sean Payton, obviously. I think there's enough there to say that the addition to, you know, in addition to player additions, the draft, incumbent progression, that the third year in the offense and expanded knowledge of your own playbook, I think we can jam that in there as one of the models of improvement for your Miami Dolphins in 2024. Just sheer continuity. And the nice part about this, we're talking about, you know, year five of a 26-year-old quarterback who figures to get a nice extension here in the future and, you know, continue that linear progression we talked about in the opening part of the show, and a 41-year-old head coach in his third season who I would venture to guess might be here a while himself, also known as it's only going to improve each year, that continuity that is. And so to bring it all back to Miami, as I kind of just did there, we saw progression with some stuff. We saw a far superior run game than what 2022 had for you. We saw a little bit of regression in terms of yards per pass, but that was almost an impossible figure to match in 2022 what Tua did. Like, it was, you know, record setting. I think we spread the ball out a little more due to injury this last year. So maybe you look at more, you know, a move at eligibles, one or two. We just saw Jonnu Smith get signed. Is one of those high picks a receiver? You could look at that as means of improvement. You also got year two, a full offseason here for Devon Achan. And I feel like he kind of gets forgotten on a national scale in terms of, hey, this guy averaged 8 yards per carry on triple-digit carries last year. Like, that should be very forefront in the breakout superstar conversation. Now, we don't really know what it'll look like on the offensive line, but I think the quarterback, the running backs, and the receivers, I've talked at length about Eric Ezukama, right, could be in for a nice little jump. I think he stands out along Achan. I think Waddle could be due for a nice bounce back after an injury-plagued 2022 season. I just think that third year for all these guys is going to make major progress. And then you take the Tyreek Hill comments, which, hey, you know, maybe shut up, dude. Like, not everything has to be said, but talking about some of the, you know, disagreements in the huddle last year. Like, let's get that stuff locked in, boys, and let's all be on the same page and go from the first-ranked offense to a better version of the first-ranked offense, right? So just remember, that's the whole point of this segment, is that what you think of a player today is not how you'll think about them in December or even October. So let's go ahead and put a pin in that, come back on the other side, and I want to talk about multiple avenues of roster improvement and what the different scenarios the Dolphins will have to deal with next week could look like here with plan A, B, C, D, E, F, G, and all the way to Z. That's all next. Drive Time Podcast, your host, Travis Wingfield, brought to you by AutoNation.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Segment two of the podcast here kind of gives us a holistic look of off-season approaches and plans and what it could look like for not just your Miami Dolphins, but how all these teams across the National Football League have multiple avenues of improving their roster. And I think you just have to kind of hope that you're one of them, right? I think the Dolphins have proven over the last several years that they are one of the teams that finds a way to attack and address their weaknesses in the roster and give their coaching staff plenty to work with here. So I want to go ahead and take a look at some of the players that have been released since we got into the free agent class, because quite frankly, that's sometimes where the best buys can be had, especially when you consider the compensatory formula remains unimpacted by that. But first, I think we ought to dig into that, into what that entails, because that's one of the many options or routes that the Dolphins could conceivably take when the new league year kicks off next week. I look at the operation as fluid and flexible, right? That's what we always say. Like, the worst thing you can do is go into a draft and you must find a starter at position X, right? Because I would say the best organizations extend that beyond the draft and make it the route most traveled the entire year. Don't pigeonhole yourself and give yourself just one option, because you can enter the offseason, like, let's say that your exit interviews and your internal review of players and coaches in the market, you've done all of that and you formulate a plan, but any of these intricate plans, they can be diverted when something happens, right? So don't get caught on your back foot. Don't get caught on your heels. So let's say, totally for instance, that back in season, your plan was to bring back specific players, and that includes Baker and X, but also the guys that we don't know what's going to happen, like with Christian and Rob Hunt, the top of the market type of guys that figure to hit the market here in just a few days. So let's say the first plan was to get both of the former back, but maybe those negotiations don't work out one reason or another. Okay, well, we know that if we go and get what the market projections say they will, you're looking at comp picks and good ones if the market projections are what they say they are, and you lose those players, like a third for a 20 plus million contract and a fourth for a contract that maybe ventures into the $15-16 million per year range for one like Robert Hunt. I mean, that's like, those are valuable resources, and this is why I just can't get with the idea that you have to make certain moves happen in order to get your desired results. Like, this is going into the weeds here a little bit, but how many games, I'm addressing like Twitter, I guess, which maybe that's bad practice, but I just feel like if you don't, I've seen the take, like, if this doesn't happen, then this is going to happen. Like, to be so rigid blows my mind in this sport that is so topsy-turvy and weekly changes our opinions like drastically every single damn week. But like, getting into the weeds here, how many games did we win last year where we were down several critical parts of the roster? Like, I've heard you guys complain about it, the injury situation, the training staff. Like, how many games? Like, I remember us winning a game by 30 points last year against a division rival when Tyreek and Teron and Rob and Connor and Isaiah were all down. If I told you last August that you had four of your five offensive linemen down against the New York Jets with one of the best pass rushers in the National Football League and Tyreek Hill not aboard, which he makes Tua, right? That's all anybody wants to tell me all the damn time. If I told you they go into that game, you're saying they're losing that game 30-0. They won the damn thing 30-0. Like, hey, yeah, we still have lots of really, really good football players. The guys that couldn't grow and improve that I talked about in the first segment. But also, are we forgetting about Tua Tagovailoa, Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle, Devon Achane, Jalen Phillips, Jalen Ramsey, Bradley Chubb, David Long, Javon Holland? It's a freaking all-star cast right there. But see, here's the rub to that point. Does losing a player that has been a pillar on your roster make you worse? Yeah, it probably does. Until you can tell me, well, what did you do with the resources that you didn't put into that position? Because if the figure is, you know, a certain amount, then maybe you can check the math. Maybe you can get two or three players for the cost of that one player if he gets priced out of your price range. And for a team that has been devastated, completely crippled by injuries each of the last 2 years, doesn't the idea of doing a 3-for-1 kind of swap, doesn't it kind of make sense? I mean, it's not a bad plan B, maybe if you even call it that. Like, maybe it's just the next plan. That's all I'm trying to illustrate here, that one part of your 53-man roster, whether it's a defensive star, an offensive, like whatever it might be, one move that doesn't go your way is hardly the end in the ultimate team sport. And when I was considering the list of players that have been cut and don't count towards the comp formula, or a summer signing when the comp formula is no longer impacted, I think it's sometime in June, I believe that calendar turns. I mean, we see Jadeveon Clowney, for instance, sign in the summer all the time, like every year as a mercenary. That's an insanely productive player who you can drop in without losing your well-earned comp picks that you, if you let those certain guys walk, that you've acquired because of your patience to your own budget you set. And part of that backup plan, and again, I hesitate to call it a backup plan, maybe just the next plan, right? Because again, set your budgets, you set your allocations, and you negotiate accordingly. But part of the next plan is the anticipation of certain players being cut and becoming available, right? Like, these guys aren't Twitter GMs. They are not you and I. They know everybody's cap situation. They know their roster construction. They know where they have youth that could supplant aging talent at that position. And they can then forecast who might have to fall on their sword via being released ahead of the new league year by Team X, by the Los Angeles Chargers, by the Washington Commanders, whoever the hell it might be, for examples. And like, on this podcast, I don't even do that. Like, I think it's a waste of time for a podcast to go through who could be cut. I mean, you can have like one segment on it, but these guys are like pouring through this, like every team's roster, figuring out who is going to be available. How does that shape our plan? How does that adjust our budget to what we might want to do? They know who it could be. And when you look at the crop of players we've seen just recently, like, there's so many good football players on that list that I have to imagine the Dolphins were aware of that going in to this portion of the calendar. And what really made me spark this segment idea was when the Seahawks released Quandre Diggs on the exact same day the Jags released Darius Williams. And I wrote all this out. And then like 20 minutes later, we had 15 more good football players added to that list. And so as I record this on Thursday at 2:00 in the afternoon, here is the list of players that have been released by their team. And what this is, there are like contributors all up and down this list, and it's not in order of position, it's in order of how I saw it come out. So Quandre Diggs, I love his game. He is a fantastic safety who can kind of be your versatile mixed match guy that can match up in the slot, play off the football, ball hawk, come down, fit the run. Darius Williams has been a really good cornerback for both Jacksonville and the Los Angeles Rams. Lakin Tomlinson was cut by the Jets. I mean, I can tell you right now that going from the McDaniel Shanahan offense to Salah with LaFleur and with Nate Hackett, like, I wouldn't blame that on Lakin for the fall off in production. I'll tell you that right now. And because of that bad production for 2 years, he probably gets dinged a little bit in his contract. So like, all right, benefit the team that signs him probably. And especially when you have Mike McDaniel on your staff. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but like, that would not at all surprise me to go get a player like that, put him in here for, you know, 1 year, $4 or $5 million, and all of a sudden he plays at a like plus starter level, right? Tight end Jonnu Smith was on my list, but he just got signed by your Miami Dolphins. We talked about him already. Tight end Hayden Hurst. Linebacker Eric Kendricks, who slowed down a little bit but still has some juice in the tank. Safety Kevin Byard. How about left tackle Charles Leno? Shaq Barrett is out there. Mason Cole. And how about Mitch Morse from the Buffalo Bills, who was phenomenal last year and never misses games unless he gets a concussion, which has happened a few times, but he plays like every damn game for the Buffalo Bills. Eddie Jackson, Jordan Poyer, Rayshon Jenkins, Justin Simmons. Safety market. Chill out, bro. There's like way too many good safeties out there. How about the defensive tackle from Jacksonville, Foley Fatukusi? Cornerback Avante Maddox, my favorite slots in the entire league. Trey White, I know he's coming off an ACL or was an Achilles, but if he's right, like, that could be a really good perimeter cornerback on the Brent Grimes deal, maybe. Maybe you go that route. Naheem Hines from Buffalo, love his game. He's a nice little scat back for you right there, kind of like your Savon Ahmed plus there. Alexander Mattison was a guy that I was big on the idea of signing him last year, but Minnesota had put the had got him back in the building there before that could happen. So, you know, those are some names. I want to go ahead and continue the segment here and finish up on the podcast. Let's go ahead and take a last break right there, because I'm going to come back and tell you about how you can do this thing and really maximize the value, the resources, what you've been allocated by the league in terms of potential comp picks, draft picks, free agent money, salary cap, all that stuff next here on the Draft Time Podcast. Your host, Travis Wingfield, brought to you by AutoNation. Talked about the list of players who have been cut by their previous teams and would not impact you in the comp formula in the event that you lose key parts of your roster, who would then kick back compensatory picks in the 2025 NFL draft. And the way those work is how much money those guys get can tend to impact how you get those draft picks down the road. And if you don't basically sign guys at the level commensurate that those guys got signed for, you are awarded draft picks accordingly. So let's say it does shake out where your two biggest free agents land somewhere else. Maybe, you know, you pen a couple of second or third wave free agents that gets offset by your own departures, you know, like a Raekwon Davis or a Brandon Jones gets a nice contract somewhere else. Like, those would then offset whoever you signed for a similar type of contract if you get to that point in free agency, which, of course, we'll cover in the coming weeks ahead here. But, you know, it's very likely you could spin that if you could bring him back or you could let him go and reap the benefits of more money, more players, more future draft picks is kind of what I'm getting at here. But if you brought back, you know, Jones and Raekwon or whatever, like these are just examples I'm putting out there, then your new signings could then eat into the guys that got the bigger contracts, 94 and 68. Does that make sense? So there are just countless permutations, ways this can all go. But if you have to say goodbye to big-time players on your roster that have had big-time impacts in the past, and let's say it's a collective, you know, what is the salary cap? $250 million. If it's like a seventh of your cap, you know, $35 million bucks in my budget that I now have to work with, and an additional third and fourth round draft pick, which will go a long way towards rounding out your roster in the instance that you look to lock up your insanely talented crop of premium position players coming up on their own contracts, a la Jalen Waddle and Jalen Phillips, who play those premium positions. Like, go find me the next Andrew Van Ginkel with that comp pick and get 4 years of a rookie deal third situational pass rusher who can step in and start in a pinch. You get what I'm getting at here? You give yourself more bites at the apple, more opportunities to find not just great players, but maybe more quality players as a potential backup option to what you perceived as maybe in-season contract offers, like we heard from Chris Greer on both those players. Like, none of this happens by accident. It's not like they get blindsided by, oh, he might leave. Like, that's what I'm trying to get at here. And with the injury history and with the good of the Dolphins the last couple of years, right, and the good players we already have from our core and the players we expect to develop and get better next year, maybe getting extra draft capital, using that money on more quality players to give us more depth and roster balance, maybe that's not a terrible idea. And then I also put this little twist on it, this little extra flavor for you. I believe that we're a team that can maximize player in a way that bad operations can't, right? Remember the Patriots, going back to them again, always took guys that had fallen off and their careers were coming to the end. And then I don't think it's inconceivable that the Dolphins could be that team that finds those guys and gets better production out of them, i.e. a Laken Tomlinson, who was cut by the New York Jets just a couple weeks back, especially on offense where you know what's what, right? And I do have full belief in Coach Weaver. We just haven't seen it here with our own eyes for defense. But in your number one of the defense is a little bit unknown, but your three of the offense, I know what to expect there. But I also think about where Tua and Austin Jackson were before McDaniel and staff got here. They got a lot better. Proof of concept. You have that. It reminds me of Moneyball. Billy, we're going to replace these guys. We're going to teach them how to play Oakland A baseball. You get the players in. You teach them how to play Miami Dolphins football, and you recreate that production in the aggregate if that's the route you have to take. So you can get more players, you can coach them up and get them to play better than what the market value was because of your system, because of your program, and you could add additional draft capital. Does that sound good? Oh, and if there's one more, you've also maintained your further future flexibility because you don't have as much money tied up into the top several guys of your roster. So coach them up, get more players, recreate the stats in the interim or in the aggregate. Moneyball, comp picks, get more future shots at the proverbial dartboard. I think that would be a good plan. I think the plan to bring several of these key guys back is also a good plan. Just know that there are plans, there's backup plans, there's the next plan. and backup plan to the backup plan to the backup plan at each stage along the way. And the last thing I'll say, I get that fans can't comprehend replacing Wilkins and Hunt, right? Like, fans are thinking about what could become out there. And here's the thing. I would get it if it was the quarterback or a record-breaking wide receiver or like prime Cam Wake, or Christian is close to that. Don't get me wrong. But still, it's not like the guy, is it? It's not Tua. It's not Tyreek. But do you really think that those two players are putting you over the edge? Like, if I told you I could take that, again, that much money and get Diggs and Williams and Smith and Tomlinson and, you know, Damian Lewis, and they cost me collectively that same price tag, and it's 2.5 times as many players, or actually 3.25 because of the two draft picks in the comp formula. That's the equation. That's the balance. That's how you have to assess it. If you're a decision maker, you have to have all these possibilities lined up in the back of your mind, and it doesn't have to be those five. That's just who come to mind here, but it's kind of like Joel Osteen and his mega church Ponzi scheme, right? He's getting his cake and eating it too because of the religious tax exemptions to peddle his snake oil. We could do that too, so to speak. I will see you guys on Monday for a fun look at the free agent list and a off-season mock off-season projection to see what the Dolphins team could look like in 2024. All of that coming your way on Monday ahead of the new league year. We'll have free agents on the podcast here, interviews, breakdowns of their game, talk to some members of the media in the former cities. Tons of content coming your way here on Drive Time. In the meantime, you all please be sure to subscribe, rate, review, all that fun stuff. Follow me on social at Wingfield NFL. Follow the team at Miami Dolphins. Check out the Fish Tank podcast with Seth and Juice. Check out the YouTube channel for media availabilities, Dolphins Today, and so much more. And last but not least, MiamiDolphins.com. Until next time, fins up. Carolina Cameron, Daddy.